Okay, let's start. The topic for this talk is LibreOffice Continuous Community Integration, and I'm Björn Michaelsen. And I'm now a deputy member of the board at the Document Foundation, and also I work at Canonical and do the Ubuntu packaging for LibreOffice. So let's see what I want to talk about in this session. In a way, it's not only that we experienced the stuff that others can learn from, and maybe the stuff that is translatable to other projects, and the stuff that might only be applicable to really big projects like LibreOffice. So the first thing I want to talk about is communication channels and how to set them up. Again, easy hacks. I think you can't talk too much about them because they are really a success of LibreOffice, and I think this is something that can be translated to other projects in a successful way quite easily. Then tools, so automatic tools that help you in your project, and that are the stuff in which these tools help you, the way these tools might hurt actually your project by introducing them, especially might hurt the communication, and the ugly, which is the stuff that is tricky to get right. But if you can prevent any negative effects and actually have the good effects of these tools without too much impact to your project otherwise. The next thing is processes, and that is essentially everything, an abstract process or a bureaucratic thing, and usually you don't want to have too much of those, but sometimes you can't avoid that. And again, I want to talk about the three parts there. And then I'll go a little bit into growth. Presentation, the history of LibreOffice, a slide with 10 developers, and said, well, that might have been actually quite a representation of what we started with, and now it's just huge. So and we had to adapt on every step on the way. So let's start with communication. I put the Linus Torvalds quote there because it's a good starting point to remember how to start a project right, just with the minimum. And it doesn't look like Linus was out to rule the world with this quote. After all, it was just a hobby. And so the point there. Things that fragment the way people communicate. So the stuff you need is a source code management system and a Bugzilla. And you should, in the beginning, if your project is small, resist the temptation to maybe do all the other stuff too, just because others are doing it. But as you grow, you will IRC, a wiki, voice conferences, blogs on the planet. And the important point is that you need to cover the whole, because at which point in time actually do we do that so that we have a second channel, and again not just one guy sitting there and looking at nothing. So this is the way you should think about growing the stuff. And on the other hand, end of the scale, a wiki is something that helps you to get something more permanent than a mailing list or IRC. And voice conferences, I found in the LibreOffice project to be one of the key factors to success, because we the engineers have a weekly call, the engineering steering committee call, in which we can synchronize our thoughts of the, on the project, and keep in touch with each other. And voice is very important to get out a barrier of written text that might be too abstract to actually see the other person, and voice already helps you. But now we're actually doing a lot in video chat with Google Hangouts, but the point is you need to have something where you can directly interact with someone, and a voice conference like a Mumble server is excellent for that. And again, for example, the QA community, which is rather small, was rather small in the start and was bootstrapped later in the project, they started off from the beginning, essentially, with QA calls every second week. And that helped a lot to like gain traction and get people into working on stuff and telling each other what they are working on. Once you have these things in place, the rest, like forums, like AskBot, social media, they are not critically important for the project itself and for the ecosystem, because they are not that directly contributing back to the core of the product, to the core of the project. And I was already talking about direct interaction and voice conferences. And here's a picture of the LibreOffice conference in Berlin. And the important point here is you have to have FaceTime. If you don't have FaceTime, you will divert in your perception of the project, and that is not good. And the more you get people to actually see each other face to face, or talk on the phone, or talk on voice, the better you can actually get everyone having a feeling that he's involved and that he knows what's going on. So I'm very happy to be here the first time in the Southern Hemisphere and seeing what is going on here in Brazil with the LibreOffice community, which is just awesome. And I think the same is true for Italo. So I can't claim enough that this is an important factor to grow your community. and to prove what can be done with a community that grows together and where you have the people actually communicating and working together. This is an example. Over the last 2 weeks, the LibreOffice QA community is working on triaging bugs, and you can see how this graph just goes steeply down. And they grew a community, or they grew new contributors to the LibreOffice QA of about 15 to 20 people who are the first time ever working on the LibreOffice Bugzilla. And this, I think, was possible because these people were meeting every 2 weeks on a phone call and actually could get stuff done together and count on each other because they knew each other and they knew, like Italo would say, they knew where they lived, so they knew who they were and what they can expect from each other. So I already said something about social media and like stuff like Google Plus and Twitter. Twitter are nice to like pushing the info out and essentially make your project known to the world, but since you don't own them, you shouldn't depend on them. This is very important. I think in LibreOffice, we have a lot of our core infrastructure not depending on any of these services, but having them available and just pushing out and reaching out to the world outside is very important. This is an example that is important in so far as that was a post by Florian of a picture of two Raspberry Pis branded with LibreOffice, and he didn't expect that to make a big impact. And in the end, it was like over 250 pluses on Google Plus and over 60 reshares. So sometimes you don't know what is getting accepted there. The same is for Twitter. We are posting our news directly to Twitter with Google News, but we also have automatic Bugzilla Twitter accounts that tweet what is happening on Bugzilla. We also have one that is twittering what is happening with the developers and the commits. But I think the Bugzilla one is much more important because this is reaching out to the people who are not in the project, and they have an easy way to see what is going on. And using a media that they know and that they feel comfortable with. So someone using Twitter might understand Twitter, and if you show them Bugzilla, they are scared because it's all new and different and, yeah, pretty complex. So this is actually a way, and the way it is at LibreOffice, these updates are, you get 10 updates per hour at least from the Bugzilla account. So it's pretty high volume, but for other projects, if you're starting, it's a decent way to just let others see what you're doing. So in conclusion, you have these, from the communication side, these groups that are all working on the project. And what you want to do is for each group to try to communicate to the next one as much as possible and as transparent as possible to make them, because there are barriers between these groups, and we don't want them, but they are there in intrinsically by the way someone is involved. Someone who's been on the LibreOffice project for 2 years has a much better knowledge about who to ask, where to go to, and can obviously better navigate in the project than someone who's just looking on it from the outside. So each group has essentially the job to communicate to the next one to get the information out and to encourage people from the next group to maybe contribute inwards to themselves. So, for example, to get people involved in reporting bugs or confirming bugs, and so get them onto the next stage in the LibreOffice project. And this is what EasyHacks are all about in development, which is very much to the core of the project, where these guys on the left, who have a lot of commits and no time to fix all the stuff that they know needs to be done, can actually point out to others where they can get started. And this way, we can grow this long tail to have more contributors in the project, which again, one day might grow into core developers. So this is essential, that we get a constant stream of people joining the project in this long tail, so that we can grow a community of bigger community of core developers from it. And this is how EasyHacks look by now. So it's a huge success, and we have a lot of people actually getting in touch with the project and being able to join in and contribute. And the idea here is, again, to push the area where you can contribute outwards to a broader group of people, so that they again, for example, at one point in time, can again teach others how to do stuff. And on the other hand, we want to avoid that responsibility is pushed inwards to fewer people. We want to push the responsibility outwards and have more people actually taking an active part in the project. And why is a fisherman there? Well, you know the old saying, it's better to teach a man how to fish than giving him a fish, because when you give him a fish, he has food for one day. If you teach him to fish, he can sustain himself. So how does this work for other projects? For the LibreOffice project, we have EasyHacks, and actually if you just Google for LibreOffice EasyHacks, you immediately find it. So this is something that is easy for us because we are such a high visibility project, but you can't expect that to happen with if you start up your little project and say, I make a few EasyHacks, that you will turn up as number one on Google with that. So there's this web page, OpenHatch, which allows you to show your EasyHacks in a way to the wider world. And it collects these issues from a lot of projects and makes it for someone who says, wakes up in the morning and says, I want to contribute to some open source project. What can I do? And he can go there and actually contribute, or find a task to do. So this is a tip for someone who's not working on LibreOffice but wants to imitate this stuff with EasyHacks. Okay, so that's about the way communication goes in LibreOffice. And now I want to talk a bit about tools. And how they might help you or not help you if you use them. And the first example is Bugzilla. I mean, developers all know Bugzilla, but actually you still have to question if it's helping you or if it's hurting you in some points. And this is, in the LibreOffice project, again, something that we have to have a special eye on, because unlike in other projects where the user base is very close to the development, or rather close, with LibreOffice there's quite a huge divide between people actually being able or willing to work directly on the code and end users who just say, I just want to use this and I don't know how it works in the inside. So how does Bugzilla help you? Well, it keeps tracks of bugs. Almost all the software world knows it. And in trained hands, you can do awesome stuff. You can do awesome statistics, and you can manage your bugs quite easily. The bad, on the other hand, if you're an end user and look at this interface, you will not be exactly sure what it actually wants to tell you. And there are quite a few areas where it's tricky for end users to understand what is going on there. Just an example, this bug is marked resolved fixed, but maybe the fix is in the source, but we haven't released the version yet that has the fix. And that, for end users, is a simple example where end users easily get confused because they say, this bug is set to be fixed, but I have the latest version and it still doesn't work. So there are quite a few quite confusing to end users, and one has to re-evaluate if one can improve areas there. Some things are really hard to improve. This whole interface, for example, is perfect for someone who's a developer and really wants to see all the data, but it's very scary for a casual user who just looks at it and is scared by all the detail that is there. So then we have a few things in Bugzilla that are a bit ugly. So they are not helpful, but we can work around them. And one is this: bugs are really hard to localize, or Bugzilla, because you want to have the bug in a language that everyone understands, everyone on the project and also the developers. And so having an ability to, or writing local bugs is really a problem because you can't easily communicate back and forth on that. The other points I already discussed a bit. And on the LibreOffice project, actually, we have an interface that simplifies filing bugs for end users, which is the bug submission assistant. And you see the interface here, which is a lot more simplified, and it has multiple steps so that you can you don't have to provide all the data at the same time, but you're guided through the steps to report your problem. And there's an experiment running right now to doing this dialogue in a localized version with the French community, which allows someone to actually file a bug in French, and this bug won't be uploaded to Bugzilla like all other bugs would in this scenario, but it's sent to the French QA list. And what they do is they look at this bug and they do all the reason for this is with end users, you quite often get bug reports like, my document doesn't work, without the document being attached. This is hard for a developer to actually interact with, and especially if this bug report is in another language that the developer doesn't speak, it's very hard to, for example, ask clarifying questions. Which version did you use, or is this only on one platform, or whatever? So, doing this, sending this to the mailing list first, clarifying the broad scope of the issue, and then reporting it back to Bugzilla, hopefully makes this easier for us. And we will look into doing this in other languages too. So this is one example going on right now where we hope to improve the interaction and like coming from the outside and actually willing to contribute, because if someone files a bug report here, it's actually a sign of goodwill, because otherwise you often see someone just twittering, my LibreOffice did something that I didn't like, without filing a bug report. So someone actually using such an interface is already willing to help us, and we should give him a hand to just improve his skills in being able to communicate with the project. So much for Bugzilla. The next example is Garage. And Garage is a system where you can upload your change to the source code on a web interface, and not having to ask someone for access and an account. So these problems that we have listed above are solved by this. You don't need to ask someone if you are allowed to contribute. You don't need to have an account. You don't need to run after someone who has the holy rights to give someone access to some part of the code. So all of this is not happening. You can just upload your change and see if someone comments on it and get involved there. And the other thing is it allows transparency. So you see what others do. And if you're shy about being a contributor and you don't know if you're good enough to contribute to the project, you can just hang around there for a week and see what others do. And I tell you, if you stay around a week on Garage, you will find that everyone is making mistakes. Even the ones who are on the project 10 years will make mistakes, and you will see that there's just communication and just improvement, and no one is eating you if you make small mistakes. So this actually allows you to get a feel of the project and slowly migrate into becoming a contributor. And since you're reviewing there, it also allows a transition from being someone who contributes a patch now and then to actually become someone who reviews patches and helps others along and becomes a teacher and an enabler for others. And this is very important, because we had quite a gap there with the people who fixed their first easy hack and got into the project and then never moved on to get more involved in the project, because they never felt confident enough to become someone who was actually able to review others' codes. Because the thinking was, these other guys are so long in the project and I need to, I can't do the same. And the longer you stay around on Garage, the more you find that these are mere mortals too, and that they do a lot of mistakes too. So it helps you to get involved and transition smoothly to become someone who actually can give input and teach others too. And you can do that on a step-by-step basis. For example, only in an area of code where you're confident and where you already contributed quite a bit, because the code base is so big, there are always areas where you will find, after a few weeks of contribution, you will know the code base better than everyone else. And then the last thing, we have build bots now that allow us to upload a change without even building it locally, and then just click a button. Well, the button is not there yet, but trigger within command that it will get built on all platforms. And this is something that is awesome for someone who is a volunteer contributor who sits at home with his, maybe even with a netbook, and just does a few changes, and he can't compile the stuff on his netbook. But with this, he can get a compile on all platforms, essentially from his home, and without having to have three big machines there that do this for him. So this is the advantage we have with Garrett, and that's the disadvantage. Garrett is yet another tool to learn, and JIT is already, for quite a few people, something that you need to learn, and it's not that obvious, really, how to use it. So some of the more tricky parts of it are quite obscure. So adding Garrett on top of that is, again, raising the barrier to entry for someone. And then we have the ugly, which is Garrett is mechanical, it's impersonal, you're interacting with a web interface and not with someone directly on IRC or on a mailing list. And it just increases the distance between the contributor and the reviewer, which is not what we want, but we also had to go ahead with Garrett because just the number of patches that we got on mailing lists were so huge that it was really hard to keep track of what is in and what is reviewed and who's reviewing what and all of this. And here's an example why Garrett is quite a bit impersonal, at least in the default installation. And this is a standard mail that you would get from Garrett if you want to have something reviewed. And it reads like a tax report or something. It's not really something that is encouraging interaction. So with this, we try to make Garrett as transparent and as accessible as possible, even though it's a machine. And we changed, for example, the text. Actually, I didn't. It was Candy and Michael Meeks who did this, to have the text quite a bit more inviting and a bit more personal with the greeting in the beginning and such things. But I think the even more important stuff is we have this footer on every web page on Garrett. So if you're browsing around on that web page, you find this on the footer of every page. And it invites you to join the IRC channel and communicate with us. And that is actually, I think, one of the most important steps that we took to make sure that Garrett is not perceived as some wall of glass that you can't walk through and that you can't access the people who are actually working on it. Because when you click on that link, your IRC goes up and you can directly chat with someone and ask, how do I use this thing, or I just got a creepy message from Garrett and I don't know how to handle it. And you can directly interact, and you will get taught how to do stuff, and you just grow confidence in accessing and improving your interaction with the project. And again, this once you are there for quite a few times, you can again teach others, which is very important. So we had this. Let me go back. We had these mails, and we actually pumped out these mails to the developer list for every change that we did, and that was just to make the migration for the reviewers easy, because they were used to have these mails on the developer list. And but that was quite a volume, so it was. We can see that here. This is the activity on one day, which we then replace. So by now, if you're on the developer list of LibreOffice, at 8 a.m. European time, you will get this this digest, which is saying, hey, these changes and these commits were suggested or changed in the last 24 hours. These went in, and these, by the way, have been around for more than a week and no one looked at them. Maybe you should have a look at them. And with this, we make it a lot easier for the reviewers also to keep track of what is going on. And for someone who's joining the developer list, it was quite scary in the beginning. It was quite a challenge, because you would get some 20 to 50 mails per day just saying, this patch got in, this patch didn't get in, this patch, blah, blah, blah. And if you just wanted to have a look at the project and you subscribe to the mailing list, and the first thing that happens is that you get 20 mails that are all pretty mechanical, that is not encouraging. So with this mail, we have that a lot better. We have one mail that substitutes that. Okay, so much for Garrett. So as a last thing, I want to talk a bit about processes. So this is stuff that you set up, how to get an account or whatever, and how they are good, bad, and ugly. The good thing about processes is if you have it documented somewhere on the wiki, it might actually give people a starting point just to, and some confidence in how to get involved in the project. And they might join the expectations everyone has on the project. And it might be good to have some processes. It's not as important what you actually define in the processes. It's more important that you have them at all so that everyone is on the same page. And I mean, you can, as I write with, as with code style conventions, you can define that you want to have white space or tabs. It's really not important if it's white space or tabs. It's important that you have, that you're all using the same stuff. The bad is everyone hates bureaucracy. And if you have a newcomer going to your project and the first thing that the newcomer sees is, okay, you have to read this 20 pages to actually know what is going on, that is discouraging. And sometimes you get the problem with, like in the European Union, where you actually define a process what a banana is, and it's not a banana if it's not 14 centimeters long. Actually, I don't know what they do with the bananas that are 13 centimeters long, and if there's someone always counting and measuring them, but yeah. So your processes should really solve a problem. So how can you avoid that your processes hurt your project? If possible in any way, try to prefer direct interaction. That means, for example, have a link like the one at the bottom of this slide. Have a link to your IRC almost everywhere so that people can get directly in touch and approach you directly, because it's much easier to prevent misunderstandings with direct interaction than trying to write an abstract policy of something. And this is avoiding indirections, but in some cases it might be needed to still have bureaucracy just to have a fallback. For example, if you have an IRC channel, you only have a small project with like 3 to 6 people involved, then not everyone is on the channel at the same time, and there might not be a response there. So you want to have some direction how someone can actually reach you and get an account or whatever if he can't reach you in a direct manner. So, after talking about tools, now I want to just go a little bit into growing pains and growing the structure of your project. And what you see on the right is the explosion of the Space Shuttle Challenger. And what happened there was that there was a small wing that should have been flexible but wasn't, because it was too cold. And because it was too rigid, this huge space shuttle exploded. So in the LibreOffice project, it was taken, there was a very conscious decision to not give too many titles or too much structure and hierarchy in the project that is upfront and giving people authority just by title and allow them to control the project because of their title. I think this is very important. It is something that was quite a challenge for me coming from Open Office, because I joined the project later, a few months later. But in the end, I have to say it's amazing how much this is enabling. So encouraging mobility, that means if someone is doing something, give him authority and give him the opportunity to show to others that he can do change. And if someone is just stepping back from activity, then it's okay to give it to someone else and give the leadership to someone who's actually doing stuff right now. This is another thing that I think LibreOffice will face in the next maybe 2 or 3 years. We were such a young project that there were essentially everything was defined anew, and there was no fixed way to do stuff. But now we are in the project already 2 years, and there are some areas where people find some way to do things that are not documented, that are, I mean, documenting means writing them in a rigid process, which is bad. I agree, but it's even worse if someone comes into the project and is confronted with a statement like, you shouldn't do it like that because we do it differently, although we never said that anywhere. So this is something I think we, as LibreOffice, as the project, will have to watch out for in the next 2-3 years, that there are not some areas where we go a specific way just because it was drawn like that, but it was never documented and it was never actually a conscious decision to go that way. Again, an example would be code style, which you can have endless flame wars over, but yeah. And in the same area of challenge, we have adapting to changes. And I have the bike shed there because these are bike shedding discussions, which means they all seem to be rather unimportant, but they can attract a lot of trolling and a lot of conflict. But one shouldn't kill all of them. One shouldn't, just because some discussion has been done a year ago, one shouldn't completely rule out to reevaluate some point, because as the project is growing and things are changing, you have to reevaluate some points again. And actually, someone might have a good point in rediscussing some topics. And this is my last slide on this. And again, it's about getting newcomers and people into the project. And you have to be very aware that if you get someone complaining to you that he didn't manage to get involved with you because he was blocked by a tool or he was blocked by a process, or actually by something he couldn't communicate, he didn't know who to talk to, that for everyone who reaches you and could complain to you, there might be 10 or 100 that were not able to do that, because all they were just frustrated with the project and walked away. So you have to be very careful to listen if you get criticism like that, to listen and to hear if this is maybe a general problem. So in conclusion, do the right thing and reevaluate your position again, again, and again. Something that was right a year ago might not be right anymore. It might be something that you have to reevaluate. Okay, this is how you can contact me, but we have a few more minutes, three something. So maybe a few questions.
Actually, not a question, but a hint, because what we did in Debian, we did some kind of team analysis about how what people are posting to mailing lists, what people are uploading, and so on, and drafted over time. And we have some tools available you might be also interested to use to get the statistics. Maybe I can later show you some slides where you can really see. And you can also see, for instance, in the Debian Mail team, when we started with meeting, and in this graph you see peaks when we started meetings, and so this has some influence. So this graph might be also interesting for you, and it works if you have M boxes or some other methods, and then you can just use it.
Right. Yeah, I would be interested in that. You always should measure your results. Okay. Other questions? Okay, thank you very much.